Hello and welcome to the Frontier Strategy Group podcast series. FSG is the leading information services partner for emerging markets executives. We partner with business leaders at over 200 multinationals by providing them with research, analytical tools, and data that helps power their emerging markets business strategies. My name is Joel Whitaker, and I'm FSG's Global Head of Research. Joining me today is Martina Bozajeva, who manages FSG's research for Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. Okay, Martina, over the weekend, we had a milestone election in Turkey, but for a lot of the busy executives that we work with at FSG, it probably fell below the radar. These were local elections for mayors and local officials throughout the country. What was so important about these local elections that we would bring them to the attention of the global executives who listen to this podcast?
The local elections in Turkey are really the first of three keystone elections that Turkey is going through this year and probably early next year as well. These were the first ones. They will be followed by presidential elections in August. And then in early 2015, or potentially earlier, we could also have parliamentary elections. And the reason why the local elections in particular were very significant is because they have been seen broadly in the market as litmus test for the popularity of the AK party and Erdogan. The reason being that, as a lot of our clients already know, there have been a lot of protests in Turkey during the past year against the AK party and Erdogan. And then starting in December, this was followed by a series of very large-scale corruption probes that seem to have put a dent into the legitimacy of the AK party. And so the question mark with these elections was, would the AK party remain as popular as it used to be, or has its credibility with the population been severely hurt? And what we found in these elections is that, in fact, the AK party has been able to rally its core supporters very strongly. And that has implications for all of the following elections and for the general political and macroeconomic stability of the country.
So Prime Minister Erdogan is in a really interesting position because I think a lot of business people around the world have thought of him pretty favorably for a long time. He's seen as the mastermind in a lot of ways of Turkey's economic boom. But there have been pretty consistent themes in the headlines over the past year in particular, year and a half, around an increasingly autocratic style of leadership. We saw a lot of protests in Istanbul. And there have been more recently some significant accusations of corruptions around him personally and the ruling circle. That's alienated the regime and Erdogan himself from a lot of the kind of urban, liberal, middle class folks that many international business people would come into contact with. But clearly, he's demonstrated a consistent connection with a major part of the electorate. So what was really the focal point of the debate politically in this election? From the Turkish perspective, what was this election all about?
Yes, so I realize that Erdogan's actions may seem a little erratic, and they have been represented like that in the international press. But in the Turkish context, they actually make perfect sense. And this is something we need to remember. There is a very significant reason why Erdogan is saying the things he's saying and is doing the things he's doing. And this is in his attempt to appeal to his core electorate. And we saw that play out in the election results. The AK party got 45% of votes nationwide in these elections, and the CHP, which is the biggest opposition party, got only 28. And AKP won both Istanbul and Ankara as well, both very important cities. So Erdogan knows what he's doing, and for Turkish politics, what he's doing gets him voted and elected. Now, the one price that he has paid in the process of reassuring his power has been this polarization of Turkish society. And so what he has done is focused very strongly on his core electorate, which is not the urban sophisticates of Istanbul. It may not, to some extent, be the political and economic elite of the country completely, but it is a majority of the population of the country. And the way that he sees the world, if he wins the majority of the votes, this gives him the right to run the country the way he thinks the country should be run, following the values that the group that elected him follows. And that is something that the urban elite profoundly disagrees with. And that's ultimately what the Gezi Park protests were about. It was about a participatory democracy in which the minority's voice gets heard, appreciated, and taken into consideration by the government. Erdogan doesn't see democracy the same way. And the people who support Erdogan also don't see it that way. It's a winner-take-all politics. It's different from what our clients are used to. It's different from what Western European or American society are used to. But in the Turkish context, it makes sense. And this is what we've been seeing playing out in the past year and a half.
Yeah, that's not unlike a lot of relatively new democracies where the principle of majority rule pretty much drives the day. Sometimes for business people, that simplifies things because you know exactly who's in charge, right? But when that ruling group starts to act, as you say, more erratically, then it creates uncertainty. So what does this mean for the economy, right? If Erdogan is strengthened coming out of this and then has to make some choices about whether he tries to extend his term as prime minister or run for the presidency in these upcoming elections after this local election, presumably this will come with some kind of impact on the economy. What do you think will drive that?
Yeah, I think what will drive it are the scenarios that might play out in the next several months, specifically about the presidential elections. Is he going to run? Is he not going to run? And if he does run, is he also going to try to pull the parliamentary elections to coincide with the presidential elections? That has been something that has been discussed in detail in Turkish society, in Turkish politics. A lot of businesses would like that to happen as well, because at least it ends the political cycle in August, and then we can see what environment we're operating in, and hopefully there will be some stabilization. So on the one hand, it's good that the AK party did well, because hopefully that will bring it a little bit more confidence rather than the panicked mood in which it has been in the past months. But at the same time, the election cycle is not over, and it's not going to be over for the economy either until that cycle completes. So what our clients should expect is that immediately, and we've seen that already, the lira will gain and there will be some improvement in business confidence, but it's going to be very short term because everybody knows there are two more elections coming up. Until those elections are over, we are probably going to see continued volatility, potentially further scandals. It's entirely possible. Possibly further reshuffles within the government that Erdogan has started to do since December. So there will still be a lot of instability and volatility in the environment. And that will have implications for business confidence, both for local businesses as well as for multinationals. And it will have implications for the currency, which in turn could have an effect on inflation and consumer spending as well. So I think we are in for a few more months of economic underperformance because of political risk until we get to a place where the situation can start to stabilize.
So when do you think stability could be in the cards, and what would it take for that to happen?
I think we just need clarity, right? So we need to see, is Erdogan going to run for president? And how is that, is he going to win, which is very likely to happen? And how is that transition within the AK party going to be managed? Because he dominates the AK party. So if there are parliamentary elections that coincide with the presidential elections, what we could see is a Medvedev-Putin-style switch between President Gül starting to be the head of the AK party and Erdogan becoming president. There are also going to be questions about the powers of the president. What kind of president is Erdogan going to be? Is he going to strengthen the role of the presidency? Is that going to create even more volatility? There are a lot of unanswered questions right now, and information is deliberately being kept under wraps, I think, because the AKP wants to manage that transition to its own interest. And because of that, everything is up in the air. I think once we see the election cycle play out, we know who the players are and in what positions they are, then we could be looking at the greater stability.
So we have to get past the presidential election in August this year and then the 2015 legislative elections.
Yes. Or if the two emerge, then it's until August, and then hopefully throughout the end of the year and further into 2015, we'll be seeing this stabilization.
Yeah. So probably a fair amount of volatility between now and that time frame. That'll put a lot of awkward headlines and maybe some explaining that's necessary for local executives in Turkey who need to report back up to corporate. But you mentioned the lira a few minutes ago, and volatility in the lira exchange rate is probably one of the major impacts in that period of uncertainty. So if we expect essentially a solid year of uncertainty in the capital markets, how's that going to play out with managing the lira and imports and exports? local pricing, etc.
Yeah, I mean, this year is going to be very difficult for any companies that import into the Turkish market and don't pass on the exchange rate risk to a local partner, for example, which tends to be a large number of companies. And so this needs to be taken into account in forecasting, in expectations for profitability, in pricing, as you mentioned. We have seen both consumer demand and business demand weakening a little bit. And when you add to that the rising cost of imported products, that raises questions about ability to sustain growth rates that have been forecasted. So I think this is a year when companies should expect probably to do a little bit worse than they were expecting to 6 months ago, for example. But I also think that this is not a long-term problem. I think that this is a very special year that we're in, and companies need to weather that, but not lose faith in the Turkish opportunity.
Yeah, so this is probably a prompt for anybody who's doing a lot of business in Turkey to pull out the budgets and targets that they set for year-end 2014 and make sure that their assumptions about exchange rate aren't going to put that in jeopardy, and to be very careful this summer and fall as they're working on business plans for 2015.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So one other thing that I think actually did make the headlines in the United States and in Europe during this period was the infamous ban of Twitter and of YouTube, because everything in social media travels on social media, right? So what do you think is going to happen next in the way the Turkish government approaches social media platforms that originate in the West? And what does that mean for freedom of speech in the country and also the marketing campaigns that companies use social media for on a regular basis?
Yeah, I think that the Twitter and YouTube ban, of course, got Turkey very negative publicity. But again, we have to understand the context. This, especially until the local elections, has been an all-out survival battle from the point of view of the AK party. They really felt very, very threatened. And likely they still continue to feel very threatened. And so it's been an whatever means necessary type of battle on their part to get the support of their core electorate and to prevent some of this damaging information from flowing. They do understand that you can't permanently ban social media. Turkey is a very open market. So I think that once the elections are over, things will stabilize and we will probably see a lot of these things go away in terms of policies. The other thing to keep in mind is the AK party itself is not a single entity with a single vision. There are a lot of liberals in it who disagree with the ban. And one thing that would be very important to track is if Erdogan becomes president and Gül, who is typically seen as a little bit more liberal, becomes the head of the AK party, is that going to bring in a process of renewal within the membership of the AK party and potentially a shift within party membership and priorities to be a little bit more liberal? And what would that mean for their engagement with civil society? What would that mean for social media being one example of that? So there could be a shift in policies, but it will take a while. And it will also take probably moving Erdogan into a different position so he can do his own thing. Because of that, I think we should take a bit of a longer term view on this.
So it's more likely that social media campaigns, for instance, might be disrupted until the political situation settles, particularly with Erdogan personally.
Yes, but social media will remain a very powerful platform for engaging Turkish consumers and businesses. And so it's not a question of giving up on it. It's just a question of understanding that there is going to be some temporary disruption.
Yeah. And I believe Facebook is still up and running, essentially. Yeah. And there's always Google Plus. Right? From public affairs to government affairs, one of the responsibilities of companies is to think about the potential for change of power, the multiple players they need to engage. The opposition was clearly very active, although this was a disappointing election for them. Should Western multinationals be thinking about cultivating relationships with opposition party figures, or should they be focusing on AK party, assuming that that's likely to be in charge in the major offices going forward?
I think the AK party will be very much in charge of the major offices. So that would be the main power with which to create relationships. Of course, relationships with all parties should be taken into account. But more importantly, the corruption probes resulted in massive purges of a lot of government institutions, and we expect those to continue. So Erdogan, in his post-election speech, said that he's basically going to go after his enemies, who in some cases he believes are members of the administration of various offices, for example, the judicial system in the country. We've seen thousands of people removed from their positions, relocated, shifted in jobs, etc. And so a lot of the public service with which some of the multinationals that serve the government may be engaging with are changing jobs. There are new people coming in. And those people are largely considered to be much stronger AKP supporters, because those are the people that the AKP party wants in those positions. At the same time, there may also be, and there already are, some measures to go after businesses indirectly that are seen as associated with the Gulen movement. And that would be a dangerous question, because those could be very big companies. Those could be very reputable companies. Those could be companies that multinationals are partners with. There's a significant political risk for some of these companies. And multinationals that work with private businesses that may, for some reason, be seen as being close to the Gulen movement, they need to have a very honest conversation with their partners to understand, is there political risk to that business? Because they may end up being exposed.
Yeah, and the Gulen movement, for those who don't follow the details, is not an alternative party, but it's essentially a faction within the system, followers of an individual by that name.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Sounds like it's not about broadening your party relationships per se, but it is about not taking the relationships that you have with members of the bureaucracy or political figures for granted, because it's a period of uncertainty of exactly who's going to be left standing across 12, 18 months from now.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe even 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So bottom line, kind of summing things up, particularly for the perspective of executives at corporate headquarters who are thinking about where Turkey should play in their portfolio and how big a bet they should be placing over time. What's the right way to think about Turkey's role in, for global business and, say, particularly for executives with an EMEA responsibility, where they look at Europe, Middle East, Africa, and see this country right at the pivot point?
Turkey has, of course, a history of volatility that has been very painful to a lot of businesses that have been in the market for a while. And so the current instability brings back bad memories, basically. But we need to look beyond that. We need to look at the long-term fundamentals for Turkey. Things like demographics, the fact that the economy is very diversified, a very vibrant business sector, a very strategic geopolitical position. Turkey is not going away as an opportunity. We're just experiencing a year of unusual political volatility, which is driving economic volatility as well. Some of these factors are internal, some of them are external. But Turkey is not crashing or going away as an opportunity. So I think the best advice for this year is keep your eye on the price in the medium to long term, because Turkey will remain a very, very important market, especially in the context of slowdowns, structural slowdowns in places like Russia. Turkey will outperform growth-wise. And so it's not time to give up on Turkey by any means.
Well, thanks, Martina. I think you've done an excellent job of putting Turkey in perspective. As you say, it's a very important market. It will be somewhat volatile, but for a business, a major contributor to performance. I'm sure that you and the team are going to have an interesting time tracking developments as this goes forward. As a reminder to our clients, you can speak with Martina or any of our FSG analysts by reaching out directly or via your account manager. You can also access all of our FSG resources on Turkey and other markets on our portal at portal.frontierstrategygroup.com. This concludes our podcast. Until next time, we wish you great outperformance in your emerging markets.